In so-called first world countries or the global north, we are lauded for our liberal democracies. We are champions and leaders of the free world. We push forward the boundaries of political representation and ensure that all members and citizens of the public can be represented in the political sphere, with their voices and decisions having actual political power and force. We aren't like those barbaric countries, those dictatorships, the scary Chinese or the corrupt Russians. Well, some of these commentators may not include you and I, depending on, let's call them external qualities, but you know, we, in whatever sense that means, have democratic foundations and institutions that uphold the rule of law and the agency of the individual, and they are founded upon preserving and promoting these values. You see, we have a democracy, is what they say. But do we actually? The rise of recent protests, the mishandling of the pandemic, the economic inequalities becoming more and more entrenched in our societies, leading to the starving children, right? Leading to starving children becoming a norm in the biggest and richest economies in the world. I find myself having to reassess this belief that we have a democracy. In fact, it leads one to question what we actually mean when we say this word. What is a democracy? And do we actually live in one? Today, we're going to talk about this. And today, I'm going to be putting forward the fact that due to both the economic and political institutions that currently reside over these countries that we live in, particularly here in the UK, since I am most common with this system, I will be putting forward the notion that we actually live in undemocratic democracies. But before we go into that, welcome to the Propaganda Machine. This is the first episode post the rebrand, and I would like to thank everybody for the supportive comments that they gave me. I appreciate all of them, but let's get right into it. But before we go into why we currently live in a terrible democracy, I want to roll it back a bit, or maybe roll it back a lot, to democracy's first ever criticism and an understanding of the origins of democracy. If we go back to ancient Greece, right, this is regarded as the historic birthplace of democracy, or Athenian democracy, except, you know, they barred women and slaves from voting. But we'll put that aside to one note, because today that is not what we're talking about. But apparently the basic principles of democracy were political ideas that affected the city were deliberated by a group of people rather than a fixed set of elite, right? That group of people being the citizens, or being a larger base than just a fixed set of people, right? Opposed to what an aristocracy would be, where only a certain amount of people who are regarded as elite by their birth or by whatever are instead replaced by the people, right? The citizens of the state, they get to decide what goes on, right? And we look back at this as a terribly exclusionary method of democracy, right? You know, by our standards that are developed in the last couple of decades, because even though many of our countries, nations were founded centuries ago due to certain things, racism, misogyny, literally every other form of oppression you could think of, we weren't really democracies until after, you know, the Civil Rights Act in America made it a functional pseudo-democracy, at least. And here in the UK, similar, when women were given the right to vote and it was not just landlords who were allowed to vote, people, of course, would regard those things as being exclusionary, the same with Athenian democracy. But even back then, democracy was criticized for, oxymoronically almost, being far too open and being far too susceptible to the will of the people. And where did this criticism come from? It came from our favorite philosopher, a guy who has amazing ideas that are terribly not wrong all the time. I don't even know what that sentence means. I'm so confused by his ideas to this day. Of course, I'm talking about Plato. You see, Plato was heavily against against democracy. He strongly criticized it. He did not like democracy, particularly after the fact that his, you know, mentor Socrates was sentenced to death via democratic election. Essentially, it was basically a referendum on his life. The trial he was put on was democratically, you know, sort of ordered out, of course, exclusionary democratically ordered out, and Socrates was sent to death for, you know, corrupting the children and leading them to believe in false gods. So, of course, you know, if your mentor dies because of a certain system, you're not going to really be, you know, susceptible to liking it. You're probably going to have a bit of a bias. But his arguments go beyond just, they killed my daddy Socrates, of course. Plato's criticism was that they inevitably lead to, that being democracies, they inevitably lead to demagoguery, and they fall into tyranny due to the susceptibility of such systems to become tyrannies of majorities instead of principled egalitarian systems that they intend to be. You see, this criticism isn't necessarily invalid. You know, we can see that even anyone with the slightest left-wing opinions will sort of agree with me, the lackluster results of recent democratic elections that have taken place. And on the other hand, many of us will be old enough or will be well-read enough to have lived through and witnessed so-called military intervention in the name of democracy. What we currently call democracy, what we currently regard as democracy, liberal democracy, this political ability to go to vote, to go to engage in a free sort of debate and political sphere, doesn't really seem democratic. And his notions and his criticisms seem to be valid. But we'll carry on with his sort of responses to democracy. You see, Plato's response, in my opinion, and in a lot of your guys' opinion, wasn't very better. He had this notion of philosopher kings and the noble lie, which is essentially that there are people imbued with different metals, that being bronze, silver, and gold, and leading each person to be ranked within different levels of the city, depending on essentially this caste that they were born into. He does, however, be quite generous and believes that it's not based simply on birth, but people can also be born into so-called gold families but end up being bronze people, or vice versa. Therefore, you know, the generous Plato did allow for some regulated social mobility. Well, I wouldn't really call it social mobility, but, you know, some sort of terrible social mobility, right? But the philosopher king notion, again, was sort of important, because what he believed, what he fundamentally believed, was that ruling, or being able to have a political opinion, was something that someone must be sort of educated in, trained in. And he uses the example, the famous example, of the boat, or a sailor's ship, essentially. And essentially to say that, would it not be the best thing to do that the sailor, essentially, who is the best at navigating, who is the best at coordinating the ship, should be the one who runs it. Not the person who is most popular with the crewmates. Not the person who can give the crewmates the best things that they want, and therefore, you know, them liking him more. He said that if we were to have a democratic election on this ship, for example, the crewmates would be encaptured by, you know, the propaganda, ironic, of the other person who isn't as good as the sailor. Right? And they would end up having him lead the ship into, you know, a crash or into a storm because they didn't pick the right person. Therefore, essentially, people can't be trusted because they are too susceptible to these demagogues. They are too susceptible to these people who will give them false promises. See, that kind of sounds true. That kind of sounds right. But, you know, why am I agreeing with Plato, or am I actually agreeing with him? You see, because I really like this sort of idea to criticize. Yeah, you thought I would say I really like this idea. But no, I really like this Platonic sort of philosophy, because I see a massive link between both Platonic philosophy and conservative philosophy. And I kind of see Plato, or at least his political philosophy, as some sort of proto-conservatism, you know. And his writings and his ideas can almost be seen word for word, or very similarly, within the notions of conservative thinkers such as Michael Oakeshott and Edmund Burke. Particularly Edmund Burke, who was this sort of forefounder of conservatism after the French Revolution. Of course, his famous essay or book, I believe, you know, Reflections on Revolution in France, of course, made the argument and put forward the notion of conservatism and this paternalistic sort of vision of hierarchical structures where certain people should lead the rest of society. But let us talk more about the linkage between conservatism and Plato, since we just heard his criticism of democracy. You see, Plato said that there will be no end to the troubles of state or humanity itself till philosophers become kings in the world. You see, the two key links between conservatism and Plato's ideas are these notions, which I previously described, of philosopher kings, these people who should be brought up into the world solely for the sake of ruling society, and this noble lie, as I said, this idea that people are imbued with certain qualities, imbued with certain you know, characteristics that make them better than other people. And while the quote was a favorite of mine to brandish around in politics class at the time, you know, to sort of, you know, show my superior philosophical knowledge and be a pretentious cunt, it is fundamentally anti-democratic. And if we unpack the idea behind it, we see the foundations of conservatism begin to unravel. So what is conservatism and what are the foundations of it? Well, conservatism is a political ideology, of course, and it's built on these foundations: hierarchy, paternalism, tradition, and organic structure. The final one is very important, and we'll get into it in a bit more. Of course, there are other facets of conservatism, and people will have different opinions of what it is, but fundamentally, these four foundations are sort of seen and recognized as being in all forms of conservatism. You see, the link between Plato's Republic and these notions of conservatism, and particularly Edmund Burke's reflections on the revolution in France and Plato's Republic, you know, become very apparent in the sense that they believe in this idea that ruling is this sort of imbued skill within people, that it must be learned or taught or is just naturally within certain men, right? Of course, certain men, and I say that because they do believe it's certain men. Women were, of course, excluded from these sort of political topics because, you know, we all know women are far too emotional to, you know, be politicians. And, you know, when men are in the lead, they never have emotional outbursts on social media sites, and they don't start wars a lot, you know, because of their egos and because they just want to conquer shit. And that's always been women. Interesting that every war has been started by a man, or at least most of them have been. There's probably a woman here or there who did something, and hey, anyway, misogynistic jokes aside, they believe that if we allow normal people to influence the government, right, these institutions, we will be led into chaos, right? Edmund Burke says that because he argues that they have this preoccupation with abstract rights, right? This liberal notion that people have human rights will lead people to overlook human nature and justify this grand spectacle of revolution, right? See, that human nature part is important because these people's worldview is fundamentally hierarchical. They don't see the world as just being this thing that human beings are a part of, and human beings being social creatures that interact with each other. They fundamentally see certain people as being better than others and deserving of their positions of power above others, whether that be based on birth, whether that be based on some sort of abstract merit or abstract quality that is, you know, proposed around the time, money, for example, financial success. These people fundamentally believe that not only should those people be in hierarchical positions, that they are entirely justified for being in those hierarchical positions, and that those people who aren't in hierarchical positions are entirely justified for not being in there, and they don't deserve to have influence because they are not in those positions. Anti-democratic. You see, it's funny as well, even modern conservatives think about this. You know, conservatives are always talking about the state and individual rights. It's bullshit. People like Jordan Peterson talk about this hierarchy of competency. It's just a rebranded form of this organic structure that these people believe in. It's anti-democratic because it no longer looks at the fundamental individual agency of people or communities, but instead imbues certain people with the responsibility, right, to see themselves as better than others based on this abstract notion or principle that they have, right? The noble lie, right, this idea that certain people are imbued with certain metals, is no different to the foundational aspect of neoliberal individualism and the attack on the welfare state socialist movement. The perpetuation of the ecological, financial, and housing crises, have been due to this imaginary and very abstract notion of individual responsibility, of somebody taking control over their own life, of somebody not not wanting to, you know, live off of the state or ask for a handout. This hustle culture, this hustle mentality is the exact same thing. That if you are at the top, if you are a Jeff Bezos, an Elon Musk, it's not because you were exploiting workers, you were exploiting resources, you were exploiting the world, the home that you live on. It's because you deserve to be there, because you're smarter, you're more creative, you're more assertive than other people, right? Every self-help book, every corporate manifesto, right? All these guidelines are based in this belief that certain people are just better than others because of these things that they have inside them. I don't know, genetics, race, whatever the fuck it is, right? They fundamentally see these things, which is why the free market, modern day conservatism and neoliberalism, right? These parties that run the countries that we currently live in, right? Whether that be the center right, heck, even the center left, all the way to the fascists, right, are anti-democratic because they see these notions of merit, these lies, this perpetuation that certain people deserve to be where they are in, where they are, sorry, or deserve to have these sort of certain principles placed upon them and these certain rights and these certain powers endowed to them because of their position are fundamentally at odds with any sort of political and democratic sphere at all, right? We should be totally against these ideas. And these ideas are not new, but they are continued to be perpetuated. They're continued to be taught and held as grandiose criticisms. I mean, the fact that we have these democratic institutions, right, being run by certain lords, for example, until a couple of decades ago, literally a couple of decades ago, shows how we don't have democracies. We have pseudo-liberal democracies where just because somebody can go to a polling booth does not mean that they truly have, you know, the necessary means to hold the people in power accountable, right? We have to understand these things. And we have to also understand that socialism and the democratization of the economical as well as the political is foundational in understanding how we reach a democracy. How do we reach a democracy, right? And why are certain people, conservatives, against, you know, socialism? Well, they're against it because socialism intrinsically democratizes and places accountability on those in power, right? Because of in the political sphere and in the economical sphere. You see, separating the political sphere and the economical sphere is an incredible injustice because people don't understand that how can somebody own political power when they don't own themselves? If someone is a slave to a corporation, if someone's whole city, whole town, whole life is owned by the business that they work at, how can they be said to be free, right? The free marketeer's separation of government and politics, right, from the economical is a separation that is not factually based on the promise of higher efficiency and less red tape. I mean, Brexit shows us that that claim is simply not true, but rather it removes the democratic accountability of the rich and it allows them to seek out the greatest profit for the sake of getting the greatest profit. There is no other principle to uphold or maintain. There is no dignity of others. There is no freedom of others that we have to maintain and we have to ensure is held up. But rather, it's just a race to the top that corrupts those who make it and then destroys everyone else who aren't lucky enough to have daddy pay themselves through whatever problems they are facing. But socialism, on the other hand, is the forwarding and progression of the initial goals of the Enlightenment. Because we recognize that one cannot speak of simply political democracy without recognizing the economic and social forces that fundamentally oppress the citizens of the undeservedly named free world. Authoritarian dictatorships and states are condemned, so why do we have to deal with authoritarian corporations, right? We can see the influence of big tech. We can see the influence of big pharmaceutical companies. We see the political influence that lobbyists have purely due to the fact that they have money, right? This country is not built on who has the most votes. It's built on who has the money to buy the most votes. Because the propaganda that is splurged out, right, by the conservative parties, by the Republican parties, by Trump and all these other demagogues, right, is allowed because of the economic system that we live under. If we have an economic system that cares nothing about profit, right, that cares nothing but profit, sorry, right, it doesn't care about anything else except accumulating and concentrating wealth into as small as a percentage as it possibly can, because there is no redistribution of the surplus value that stems from the labor of the workers, we end up with the democracies and these tyrannies that the initial criticisms were aimed at. You see, with the initial criticisms, where I said I liked them, is because they're shit. And I like laughing at Plato because he's a terrible philosopher, right? Yeah, he had some decent ideas, sure, here and there, maybe. I probably haven't read enough of him to understand that. That's a lie. He didn't really have many good ideas, and we should probably separate ourselves from always going back to ancient philosophy just because they were the first ones to do it. Rather, the reason why their sort of foundational criticisms of democracy are so terrible are because they separate the political and the economical. They separate the political and the social. They don't understand that simply giving someone the right to vote does not make something a democracy, right? There was a plebiscite, right, to allow Hitler to take over Austria back in the 1930s or 40s, right? That didn't make it democratic because there were stormtroopers everywhere ensuring that these people voted for Hitler or they would be beat up or shot or killed or sent to a concentration camp, right? We have to understand that simply giving someone a vote doesn't make it democratic, that we have to do far more to push for democracy, which is why we don't currently live in democracies. How can we claim to live in democracies when our entire lives are influenced or led or controlled by corporations that are not accountable to us? Socialism makes these accountable. When we have the means of production owned by the people who work there, it suddenly becomes a tale where no longer can secret boardrooms, you know, make decisions about everything and influence the world in ways where we don't know how they do it or are not accountable in doing so. It becomes a state of affairs where the influence of corporations is directly held accountable by the people, by the workers, by the state, by the citizens of that country, by the citizens of that territory, right? And it's not just economic capital, right, that is strictly accumulated by the elite, but the influence on a democracy, as I said, goes into our cultures and our social ideologies, right? Cultural hegemony, Gramsci talked about it. Their influence on us stems beyond the fact that they are able to just actually make capital, right? That is, of course, the principal thing that they do, but its consequences lead on. You know, if P necessarily entails Q, then we can say that when there is P, there will be Q. So when we have an economic system built on continual crashes that lead to unaccountable bank owners and corporate lords being handed out lifeboats while the rest of us drown under the tsunamis of debt following on, which then lead to the division of the political realm, which somehow always lends itself to evil individuals who wish to blame the other in society rather than the failures of the system, right? Which then leads to discrimination, oppression, and hateful division. Can we not say that this system that we live under, this capitalist system we live under, entails such disaster? Some people might want to separate corporatism or cronyism from capitalism without recognizing that the concentration of capital, the lack of accountability, the lack of power from the people to influence the economy, right, leads to this cronyism necessarily, right? It's a bullshit argument. Because just like how people will say, oh, democracy doesn't work right because of, you know, demagogues or whatever, since they are ignoring the fact that these demagogues come out of external characteristics and that we have to progress democracy further rather than reel it in to get rid of these demagogues, they are building their argument on a fallacy and a lie, right? Conservatives, Plato, and as I said, other critics who lambast democracy fail to recognize the fact that this separation of the political from the material and economic realities of the people are what lead to such demagogues gaining power. The spectacle of revolution being misunderstood, that shitty insurrection that just happened, is based on promises that are allowed to be made because of the economic inequalities and the disenfranchisement of the people, right? Anyone who talks about legitimizing the political power of the people without legitimizing the economy and social freedom of the people do not have a coherent conception of democracy. Because how can one own political freedom when, as I said, one does not own themselves. One is not free to uphold their own agency, their own dignity, their own freedom onto others. It is simply incoherent and doesn't make sense, which is why we have to push in the face of these disasters for the democratization of our societies. We have to understand that. It is imperative we understand that moving forward, that democracy does not work by just giving people a vote. Our media institutions, our financial and economic institutions will infiltrate and poison the discourse if they are given the ability to, when they are not held accountable, when they are not owned by the people and run for the sake of the people, but rather for the sake of profit. It will lead us to disaster. And we have to understand that. I hope you guys enjoyed this episode, and I hope you guys have learned a bit more about democracy and about progressing it. And I hope I have given you guys a new insight into what we can do to ensure democracies are upheld and progressing forward to make sure that everybody is able to be free from ideology, free from oppression, and free from discrimination, so that they can flourish and grow as human beings and communities. And I hope that all of us recognize that. A person commented that they didn't know what to do if they were in a small state or in a small area, right, where they don't know if there's a lot of leftists. Take that initiative. Be the person who is the voice of your own community. Go out and look for others. Well, not in this COVID times, but the internet is an amazing resource. Think to the times in which the Civil Rights Act occurred. Before that, how black people were fighting for decades, centuries, to get the freedoms that they still don't have entirely. We have to continue that fight, and we have far easier ways of doing it than Martin Luther King, Malcolm X, and the great civil rights activists of their time did. We have resources that we can use, whether that be online. Yes, tweeting does get a bit annoying at times, but everybody has a voice that they can use. Everybody has access to some sort of technological resources or just paper resources, right? Go around putting up posters so that if somebody's going on their walk, of course, make sure you don't have COVID, that if someone's going on their daily walk, they see that poster and maybe they think about it, and maybe they go out and reach these sort of channels like mine that try to educate people on what being democratic and what pushing democracy actually means. Make sure that you are doing what you can, and don't give yourself burnout, of course. Take a break. I've taken many. And keep informed and keep on struggling and fighting, because that is what activism is. That is what the political sphere is. You know, Noam Chomsky said it. You know, you fight, you fight, you fight, you win, and then you continue to fight, because there's something to fight for. There will be something to fight for. There will be something to push forward. Talk to those around you. Talk to your family, your friends. Don't bring up socialism. Bring up criticisms of capitalism and then your own, and then socialist responses to that, without using these scary words, right? That are, you know, now buzzwords that, you know, turn people off or make people react in certain ways. But above all, keep on struggling, keep on fighting. It's been Mohammed Hassan from The Propaganda Machine, and I'll see you guys next time.